are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Do You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. Hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, need to do, should do, better do, must do, could do, and will do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done. That's right, brothers and sisters. You always get it done. That's what should happen for our people. We should always strive to get things done in a timely manner and with each other. That's right. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives, and that is timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa Imposed. Click on that and take you to where previous recorded programs are, which are dated and titled. Other programs here on the Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, after my program, and Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. All times I'm going to give our Eastern times. 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Right after Acres of Diamonds, it's Let's Buy Black 365. And that's from 8 to 9. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Revive from 8 to 10. On Friday, if it's Friday, and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. on Friday. On Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Right, it's not me. It is Sister POC. Proof of Consciousness and her program, Revive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And you can call and give your questions, comments, or concerns, or just give us your African perspective. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall here in Atlanta. So if you're in the Atlanta area and you're going to the Greenbrier Mall, check them out. Pick up some products. Laundry detergent. That's right. We produce the laundry detergent. In fact, brothers and sisters, as you know, we should produce
everything we need. We should produce everything that we need. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Brother Tahembe, Bomani Tahembe, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Check him out. He just came back from a tour in Ghana, and I'm quite sure those pictures and maybe some video is up. So check out Brother Bomani. And more importantly, he has a trip coming up in May. You might be able to go on that trip in May 2019 because right now, if you start to put a little money here, a little money there to save, you can be on that trip. It's a 14-day trip. You're going to go all around Ghana. And the number to call is 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. If you want to check out some of the pictures, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to check out the videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007 and get ready for that May 2019 trip. You could be on it, brothers and sisters. You could be on it. Books. Better is a book than a well-built house. Better is a book than a memorial plaque in the temple, because what is written is for eternity. And we have a couple of bookstores here. I hope you have a bookstore in your location. You know, if you don't, maybe you might want to start one. But, you know, I know it's tough. Businesses are very tough. Well, there's a number of bookstores here in the Atlanta area. One is the Shrine of the Black Madonna. They have books, furniture, all kinds of good stuff at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. They also have the red, black, and green NASCAR shoes. That if you saw me, I got them on. Got them on right now. They're comfortable on my feet. So check out the Shrine of the Black Madonna. They also have a history program. The American African History Club presents American African Multimedia Library. He has a multimedia library that currently over 4.5 terabytes of enlightenment. I mean, that's huge. You're going to have videos, images, audio files, books, all on that external hard drive. I mean, it's deep, isn't it? Also, too, every Saturday at the Shrine, every Saturday, free and open to the public, is the History Club, Know Thyself. Multimedia presentations at the Shrine, and it's all free, and you can call 404-444-6996. 444-6696. 6696, if I get it all correctly. And that's at the Shrine. Other bookstores are the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Medu means writings. Netcher means gods. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Check them out. Also, too, Black Dot. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Brother Jamu, he's getting ready for Kwanzaa. In fact, I'm going to be there for Kwanzaa. Also, I'm going to be at the Shrine, too. We're having Kwanzaa at the Shrine every day. Our day is the Kujichagulia, the 27th. And then on the 29th, I'll be in Lithonia at the Black Dot. I'm hosting, and my special guest, or the guest of the for the program, is Baba Mwalimu Baruti. Baba Baruti. That's fantastic. So check it out at the Black Dot Cultural Center Kwanzaa. I'll be announcing other Kwanzas. And, of course, I'll be playing Kwanzaa music throughout the program, because I think that we need to get ready for Kwanzaa. This is a special year. We need to embrace Kwanzaa. And you know I know that. You know that, too. We need to embrace it. It's something that, not just as a holiday, but something that we instill those principles into our everyday lives. Everyday lives. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, the fourth principle of Kwanzaa, Ujamaa. Or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us, go to the website, usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com, and check out Us Lifting Us, Hulu. Every Thursday, have their broadcast every Thursday. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. To check out the Hulu broadcast at 9 p.m. tomorrow night. 9 p.m. Eastern. Check out the Hulu broadcast. Also, too, we have a cafe. We pulled our monies together. That's what Hulu's about. And we created Cafe Hulu, located 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza here in Georgia. We're open Monday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we sell coffee. We have African coffee. We have Cameroon, which is my favorite. If you listen to this program, you will know Cameroon Boyo is my favorite coffee. Tanzania, Kenyan, Ethiopian. I think we had some Nicaraguan. We even had some Papua New Guinea. Yeah. So we get coffee from wherever. And of course, loose teas. Everything that is sold at Cafe Hulu is prepared by us. That's right. So check it out. We also have a drink, a vitality drink, by my good brother and friend, Brother Novak Young, Ambrosia. Ambrosia. If you want to check out Ambrosia, check it out by going to his website, Complete One Beauty. Complete One Beauty. And then also, too, check out my good brother. His number is 678-508-7254. 678-508-7254. So those are my announcements. And now, of course, our daily from the Inye Sensei, the Inye Sensei, which is a calendar of revolutionary thoughts by Baba Mwalimu Baruti. And although today is the 12th, and I was gone. I was in D.C. for the Kemet Morphosis Conference. I'm going to talk about that. And then shot up to Philadelphia to check out Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, Brother Ralph, and Brother Joe. Only two people I saw, which is Elliot and Ralph, and it was great to meet them, good to see them. It's always great to put a face to the name and the voice, because both of those brothers have distinctive voices. I love them. The December 7th, which is Kwame Nkrumah, I'm going to read that one and then the one for today. The secret to life is to have no fear. Kwame Nkrumah, Osagyefo. The secret to life is to have no fear. This is what Baba Baruti says. It is our fear which lets the European corrupt our children's mind. Having created us in their minds, they know our fears and use them to focus us to relinquish our children unprotected to their insanity. And they know well how to corrupt them. They know that all it takes is one perverted image, one loaded word, one twisted thought to start the process. They know that if they can implant that image or word when a child is young enough, it will find fertile enough gray matter which to take root. And while it may not immediately come to dominate his or her thought, it will hold its own until the mind is exposed to more corrupt thoughts as life goes on. It is like the cells of alcoholics who no longer drink. If they ever drink again, they're more easily to return to the bottle because of their earlier alcoholisms was powerful enough to permanently mutate the structures of their cell such that these cells would forever be receptive to and greedily seek out the taste of alcohol in their blood. Only those retaining their sanity without fear can prevent this assault against the minds of our children. Nothing else will be reasonable or sufficient. Affirm, because I have my African sanity, I am without fear. Affirmed, because I have my African sanity, I am without fear. Ashe. And the one for today, December 12th. You can't integrate the European side into the African side. You'll become schizophrenic. You've got to integrate the old African side, which is our heritage, and the new African side, which is our reality, to produce a new African consciousness. Dr. J. Leonard Jeffries. You study and emphasize differences between people when they have expressed and consequential meanings. When they reflect and manifest real, tangible, effective forces between them, whether social, cultural, political, economic, familiar, educational, spiritual, military, emotional, or all of the above. At the acelic and cultural levels, Africans and Europeans are irreconcilably different in their assumptions about the creator, the universe, truth, and the purpose of life. This creates very distinct ways of how we look at, act on, and interpret each other and reality. Clearly, there is no gray matter. Clearly, there is no gray area of worth. Only one can rule any given mind. For fused, they induce insanity. Only one can rule any given mind. If they are fused, they induce insanity. If we are ever to be sane again, wholly ruled by an African sanity evolved and gathered from truth of our sojourn on this earth, we must come back into our own. Otherwise, the most we can expect is to remain senseless. Affirmed. I straddle no fence nor wander around in any gray area. Affirmed. I straddle no fence nor wander around in any gray area. Be sincere. Brothers and sisters, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be here with you today on this Wednesday, on Hump Day. Had a great time in Washington, D.C. at the Chemetamorphosis Conference. I'm going to talk about that. And then, of course, shooting up to Philadelphia to meet with Brother Elliot and Brother Ralph. In fact, I got a call here. Let me take this call. 215. Go ahead.
Brother Oshie, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, Joe. How are you, Joe?
Miss Brother Oshie, I was just telling good Brother Ralph this, and I felt so bad when they were able to get with y'all this past weekend, man. It was just a crazy weekend and stuff.
That's
man.
Okay, Joe,
Brother
listen.
Oshie, you know, the guy's willing, brother. I'm going to definitely meet you in person, man. Like to, you know, meet you in person as well, man.
Sure,
and you met with Brother Ralph and Brother Ellie. That's, and they two good brothers and
that's
stuff,
right.
man.
That's right.
But I'm glad you was able to get to Philly, enjoy your little brief stay here in Philly, brother. That's good, man.
Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. And we will be back. Believe me.
Oh, yeah. I better get with you next time you come here and stuff.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. No
and
doubt.
I appreciate your words of wisdom that you said it by Brother Baruti just now. Those were good words of wisdom, brother.
Yes, they are.
You know,
he has He has a book out that they are daily revolutionary thoughts. And so I'm going to be doing that on my program from now on every day. And sometimes if there, because since I'm only on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, if there's something I know that I think that the listeners should hear, you know, I will read that from previous days, because it's all dynamite stuff. It really is. It's all mind altering.
No
it's beautiful stuff. So it's
no
great.
Doubt.
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, Brother Oshie, I was just talking to a couple of brothers over the last couple of days, friends of mine. We was talking about how these Europeans, how they dig back and they find stuff that brothers say years ago, whether it's about the gay community or whomever, and they make them brothers apologize. I'm like, these brothers got to stop doing that. They got to stop saying, look, man, I said it back then. I was young back then, or if I said it back then, I meant what I said. I mean, like Kevin Hart, now they went and got this brother that just won a Heisman Trophy for the University of Oklahoma,
right,
young black quarterback. They making him apologize for some right. stuff he said was 15 or 14 or 15
right.
or 16. I mean, come on, man. Hey, these white boys say all kind of crazy. I remember right here in Philadelphia, the white boy that played for Villanova's basketball team, the Italian boy, all kinds of racial slurs on his Twitter page
right.
and stuff. And they didn't come and dog him like that. And so, man, he deleted the page, and that pretty much was it. There wasn't no, you got to apologize, all that. But they always make brothers have to go through all that stuff. But see, I blame these brothers, but Brother Oshie, for keep doing that. I would just say, look, man, if I said it, I said it. That was then, this is now. You know, I'm not going through all that again. See, it's like, you know, a person can't make you do nothing. You know, when you keep on capitulating, apologize, they have you apologizing to the end of time.
Yep.
You know?
Yep, you're right.
I get sick of brothers, and there's always brothers that have to go through all that stuff, man. You know, it's no different, Brother Oshie, with the with segments of the Zionist Jewish community. I was
yep.
trying to make that distinction and stuff. Like I say, Pat Buchanan and these white racist bigots, they can say whatever they want about Israel or the Jewish community. Nobody says, the Jewish people don't say a word, but the Minister Farrakhan, Leonard Jeffries, or the late great Steve Coakley say something, oh, God, it's the whole hell and heavens move and stuff, man. Yeah, but they only go after black people and
yeah.
stuff like that. Mark Lamont Hills, anybody, they always go after these people. Like I say, these white boys, on any given show, I watch these political shows, they say whatever they want about Israel and nothing is said. Believe me, because like I said, the segments of the Jewish community, they know these white boys don't give a damn about them. And they seen what happened in Pittsburgh, and they know you got elements out there like that. So they're not trying to, you know, upset these white racist bigots. So they take their frustrations out on black people. That's what they do.
Yeah.
You know,
and see,
that's the way it go in this country.
Right. And so anytime you make a reference to European Jews in an adverse way, they want you to apologize.
Exactly. But it's only for black people.
Yeah,
brother,
right. Because the same
only
thing.
Only for black people.
Same thing happened to Spike Lee. The same thing happened to Michael
Jackson. Exactly. Michael Jackson.
Yep.
Don't
you
forget
know.
Michael and that song. You drew me on the song. They made him take it out the song.
Right.
Matter of fact, they went after Jay-Z, but I got to give Jay-Z credit. Jay-Z stuck to his guns, and that 444, he was saying something in the lyric about the Jewish people controlling the economy. And they tried to – Jay-Z stuck by his guns. So I'm not taking nothing out. And he stuck by his
guns.
Man,
believe
that's
me.
These brothers need to start getting some backbone.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, when you look at the relationship – between European Jews and African people, this is not one of shared commonality. It's not one of shared help. This is usury. The European Jews have manipulated us. In fact, they're talking about trying to join the African Union. Of
ain't
course,
there something?
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna tell you, if Ghana allows that to happen, I'm gonna be so damn mad at Ghana. I may not move there now.
I feel you on that, man.
And Oshie,
you know your history about this user relationship with us, because you know, you talk to anybody that's my age or definitely older than me that know a little bit more than me, right here in Philadelphia on the old Columbia Avenue, which is now called Cecil, named after the late Civil Rights Leader Cecil B. Moore. You know, Jewish people had stores all in our communities back then.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they were selling our people rotten food, rotten meat, all that kind of stuff. But here's the deal. They show the lack of respect that they have for black people, even though black people, we don't look at the big picture. When you see a lot of these white Jewish lawyers today and doctors who like in their 60s and 70s and stuff like that, it was because their mothers and fathers had stores in the black community in Philadelphia, and that's how he was able to make money off the black people and send their kids to medical school.
Sure.
Send them to law school and the stuff, off the backs of black people. But here's the kicker, though. After the riots in 64, when it was police killings of a black man in North Philadelphia, after all that stuff happened, when the Jewish merchants who made their money, bulk of money off of poor black people, instead of having the respect and decency to sell the stores to black people, guess who they sold the stores to, Brother Oshie? They sold it to Koreans.
Yeah.
They sold to everybody but black people. And this is a known fact. This, people can fact check. This happened right here in Philadelphia. Even though black people paid their way for their children to go to medical school and law school, they didn't have enough decency to say, well, look, we'll sell these the black merchants or whatever since we don't want to be in the community no more. No, they sold it to everybody else but black people.
And see, that's systemic because that was the same situation in Milwaukee. The same situation in Milwaukee. I remember the two Jewish stores in my neighborhood. You know, although one of them we got, but then later the brother couldn't handle it, and he's because his family didn't want to do it anymore, and so an Arab came along with deep pockets, and you know there that is. But I remember something, Brother Joe. I went to a NAACP convention in Denver in 1980. Ronald Reagan was running for president. He was in attendance.
Yeah, that devil.
Yeah, I'm hip for real. In fact, I maintain still that he was the worst president because he's the one that created this economic inequality that you see, economic inequality. He's the one that did that. But there was a brother on the plenary floor when everybody's on the, you know, there was no breakout room. There was no workshop. It was on the plenary floor. And he got up there and he was in tears. He was saying that how he's seen his community that he lived in being transformed. This is in 1980 by all these Arabs and Koreans coming into his community, buying up all the businesses and gas stations and convenience stores. And, you know, I mean, and then I saw the same thing when I got back to Milwaukee. I saw the same thing. And so today, I can't speak. Anywhere else, I can speak about two places that I've lived, Milwaukee and Atlanta. Very few of us own service stations.
That's true.
Convenience stores, corner stores. Very few of us. That's just like when Jay said about some Koreans learning how to cut our hair.
I know.
You know? And that was deep. And Elliot confirmed it. That's what's happening. They're learning to cut our hair so they can give us a discount haircut because the haircuts cost anywhere, especially for a young child. Let's say I'm a woman and I got three kids, you know, and the haircut now is $15. Well, that's $45. That's $45. That's right. But if the Korean comes along and cuts the kid's hair for $5, that's $15. You see? know? Yeah. So I'm saving $30. You know,
exactly.
And so I understand that dynamic. And believe me, we do that. We look at that because of what has happened to us in this enslavement process. There is no loyalty to one another.
No, it's not.
You know, so if you feel you got a better shot at going to the Korean to his because he means just like when the Korean said, we're going to come there and we're going to take. All the beauty supply stores. We're going to do your nails. We're going to do your nail. Like I said, I can't speak to other places, but I've lived in Milwaukee and I've lived in Atlanta, and that's what's happening. So I'm quite sure it's happening where you live.
Oh, no question about it. And Brother O, you make a good point, and Brother Jay, you're absolutely right, because, for example, right here in Philadelphia, right down by the Dobbins Tech High School, it's a vocational school right there in the heart of North Philadelphia, right near 22nd and Lehigh, right? And by the way, right around that same area, the Nation of Islam could be building a new mosque there right near that same area, right near the big church there, too. So they go ahead and shoot. You have two powerful institutions to serve the black community. Well, anyway, right in that same area, Brother Oshie, check this out. I don't know if they're still there, but a few years ago, I went down there to see a friend of mine down there, and I was shocked. I saw a Korean soul food place, a Chinese soul food place.
Yeah.
And I don't eat the swine, but it was amazing. Yeah, Chinese people in there serving black people. Chitlins,
brother,
hog marks, collard greens, everything.
No, whatever you want. It's just like the Arabs. When they came in, I'm thinking, well, they're Muslim. No, they're selling our people pork. They're selling little.
Sure is. I know someone that do it. Yes.
Right. They're selling kids cigarettes.
Mm. Yep, that's correct.
Individual cigarettes. I'm telling you, there is no respect for our life. There is no respect for African life by those outside of us. They don't give a damn. In fact, you know what? Just like the Caucasian, all of them, it's mind over matter. They don't mind.
It's all about exploiting us.
Exactly. They don't mind doing to us what they have done to us because to them, we don't matter. And they'll exploit us at any time.
Right, up at Brother Mo, who's going to start calling your show soon. He calls Elliot and them show from time to time.
Brother Mo, yeah.
Brother Mo is a Muslim like myself.
Right on. Tell him to give me a call.
He definitely will soon, but stuff. You know, he has some health issues, but he's a good brother. He will be calling soon and stuff. But check this out, Brother Oshie. He went to an Arab who's supposed to be a Muslim right here in Philadelphia not long ago. And he confronted him. He said, "You should be ashamed of yourself, brother. You're supposed to be a Muslim. You know, you sitting there selling out people's swine, selling these kids cigarettes and Lucy's." And he said, "You should be ashamed of you." I mean, he got right in his ass, and rightly so. Because like you said, because they say the true Muslim who don't eat swine is not going to sell it to nobody. If they don't eat it themselves, they're not going to sell it to nobody else. But like you said, just like the Caucasian, these people look at us like economic footstool. So they sell us anything that they know is bad for, anything to make a buck and stuff like that. And sadly, Brother Oshie, you know, our people, because of our mentality, we go along with it, and then our lack of black misleadership, yep. They sit there and let these people come into our communities, get these stores selling our people this bad food and drink and all this kind of. So this was like a vicious cycle, Brother Oshie, just goes on and on and stuff, right. Man. I mean, Brother Oshie, to this day, I'm still tripping over that to see a Chinese guy selling black people chitlins, collard greens, hog maws. I said, I'll be damned. I said, what have we come to in this country? Country, man.
A good friend of mine, where she lives in Baltimore, mm-hmm. there's a strip mall there. And in that strip mall, there are no American African-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. But they have all kinds of stuff. A liquor store, a somewhat of a supermarket. But they have a takeout. No, it's not takeout, but it's soul food. Mm-hmm. Cooked by Koreans.
Oh, yeah.
Cooked by Koreans. Everybody, and a lot of times, you know, my contention is who's collecting the money. So sometimes exactly. You can have a business, you know, and they may have a dark face in a place, but the reality is who's collecting the money? Who really runs this business? You might have, because sometimes, you know, just like there's a service station near my home, mm-hmm. they employ us, you know.
Sure.
But the people who own it, you know, are Indian. And which is ironic because the Indians don't like our ass either, but, you know.
That's right. And Brother Oshie, again, you know your history, Brother Oshie, because I give two quick examples of what you're saying, right? And I grew up in North Philadelphia, right, near Temple University. It was a bar that my dad and many of the elders back in that day used to go to have a beer or whatever like that. It was called Sunray Bar, and this black guy named Sam. Everybody assumed Sam owned the bar because they know Sam was, you know, both loud, right. Kind of like real – you know, bodacious type brother. And so and everybody assumed Sam, and Sam pretty much was telling everybody he owned it. So nobody questioned him about it.
Right.
It wasn't until after Sam died back, and he died like in the 80s, late 80s, that they found out Sam was just fronting for this white. He was actually the white mobster, the white Italian mob boys. They owned it. He was just fronting for them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So and stuff. And like you said about sometimes circumstances force us to get our own. In Dallas, Texas, about 7 years ago, the Nation of Islam had an article about it in the final call. This Korean had a service station, and he was so disrespectful to black people, calling us the N-word, I mean, throwing stuff at us, doing all kind of racist, calling the police on us. So the black community got together with the help of the Nation and the Christian community, and they shut this. They showed
shut
you
him
what
down.
Was done when we put our stuff together.
Shut
they
him
shut
down.
It down, and black people got their own service station, Brother Oshie.
Right on.
They got their own service, and they forced that Korean to go out of business.
Ashe. And see, in Milwaukee.
Ashe. That's right.
In Milwaukee.
So it shows you what can be done.
Yep. In Milwaukee, the new Black Panther Party with my brother King Rick, and they're doing pretty mm-hmm. much the same thing. If they hear mistreatment by our people, by these, you know, store owners, service station or whatever, they'll put it on tape and they'll go in that and they confront them. They literally confront them and they say to them, "If you don't stop this, then we're going to come and shut you down."
That's right. You know? Like public enemies say, "Shut them down."
Yeah.
Shut them down.
That's right.
And that's what we can and see. Below that tactic. See, I mean, Dr. King even showed that what can be done back with the bus boycott. I know back then people didn't probably put the total emphasis on that, but he showed you just by even the Montgomery bus boycott that you can shut white America down. We can shut them down.
That's right.
Like this holiday coming up right now. Mm-hmm. Like the ministers say, up with Jesus, down with Santa.
Yeah.
Imagine the impact our people have across the country, whether it be in Milwaukee, Atlanta, Fluffy, Chicago, if we stop going to these white racist malls in the suburbs where they shoot out people down, and go, and you're going to celebrate Christmas and Kwanzaa and everything, go out of your way to support the black vendor on the street corner.
Right.
Support the black African marketplace. Support people like that. Brother OCO has such a tremendous impact on
no
black
doubt.
Economics.
No doubt. And that's that's why Kwanzaa is so important. Not
yes,
just as a celebration, but the principles themselves that should be instilled in our everyday lives.
Yes.
Unity,
yes.
Self-determination, collective working responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. We need those things in our everyday lives. So when we look at each other, when I see Joe, I see myself. And,
yes.
and I protect Joe because I know Joe will protect me. We have shared interests in doing the best for our community. You know, so
and that's what it's about, OG. Because it's funny you were making some Kwanzaa, because I just bought some Kwanzaa candles yesterday. I went to the African bookstore over in Camden, New Jersey, right across from Philadelphia. I went over to the brother and support them yesterday and bought me a whole bunch of Kwanzaa candles, brother.
All right, right on.
Did.
Okay.
I'm going to run, bro. Let you go, bro. It's good talking to you as always, Brother Oshie. Love you, man.
You too, Brother Joe.
And like I said, Lord's willing, hoping when you come by this way again, who knows, it might be down in Atlanta way sometime.
Hey, if you are, if you are, let me know.
I might get down that way and see you. Who knows?
Okay, you know. All right, dear brother. Assalamu alaikum.
Take care, Oshie. Peace. Alaikum salam.
Right on, Brother Joe. Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing him and along with Brother Richard. We will. Because, in fact, what me and Elliot were talking about is on our platform, our radio platform, we need to do something that extends out into our media community, whether it's here in Atlanta or Philadelphia or wherever, in terms of organizing a summit to talk about issues that happen to our people. But the Chemetamorphosis Conference, the 10th anniversary of the restoration of a 25th dynasty temple that Anthony Browder helped put together. I mean, it's really beautiful. Great work. I mean, him and his daughter and all those involved. But it's in honor of Asa Hilliard. And so for those of us, I'm going to read from the beautifully done souvenir ad journal. And I'm mad because I didn't get my African Perspective business card in there. I am really mad about that. Believe me, I am, because it's really well done. Dr. Asa Hilliard, Nana Bofo, 1933 to 2007, Pan-Africanist, educator, historian, psychologist. The Asa Restoration Project is the namesake of our own distinguished nobleman, the late Dr. Asa Grant Hilliard. Baba Asa was a dynamic psychologist, Pan-Africanist, humanitarian, Kemetologist. See, there's a difference between a Kemetologist and an Egyptologist. See, a Kemetologist is searching for the truth. An Egyptologist is somebody who's continued to perpetuate lies. Okay? Is a Jegna, okay, not a mentor. We don't use mentor no more. We use Jegna. And Jegnak is plural. This is Jegna. He was a Jegna, master, warrior, teacher. Historian, lecturer, researcher, and author of more than 1,000 publications, who dedicated his life to freeing the minds and protecting the ancestral legacy of African people worldwide. As such, he traveled extensively, giving workshops and advice to schools in Africa and throughout the United States. He was often called upon to give expert testimony on testing of African children. He served as a lead expert witness in several landmark federal cases on test validation and bias. He was a beloved professor and distinguished professor of Georgia State University for 27 years. And prior to that, the Dean of School of Education at San Francisco State University and the Superintendent of Schools in Monrovia, Liberia. Dr. Hilliard's knowledge and influence were enormous. It is declared that the history of African people in the United States has witnessed few who have been so truthful and so wise. Of his many other accomplishments, the most important may well be his continuing demand for academic and cultural excellence for people of African ancestry. He insisted that the knowledge of African history and culture was essential to the mental health and wholeness of African people. He co-chaired the first national conference of the infusion of African and American African content in school curriculum. In his classic document, Saving the American African Child, he co-authored with the late icon, Dr. Barbara Sizemore, and other members of the National Alliance for Black School Educators. Dr. Hilliard insisted that academic and cultural excellence were inseparable companions, that the complete education of children of African descent demanded both. Dr. Hilliard brought study groups to Ghana and Kemet for 30 years, making his transition to the ancestral realm while in Kemet, a place he loved dearly. It was 2007, while in Kemet, he led his annual study tour and delivered a keynote lecture at the annual conference of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, ASCAC. And it was good to see Sister Yah, Queen Nzinga's sister, and other members of ASCAC on that Sunday at the Kemetmorphosis Conference. It was good to see her. And of course, and to acknowledge Brother Tony Broder for the work that he has done. He founded ASCAC. He was a founder of ASCAC, along with Dr. Melana Karinger, Dr. Clark, and many others. He was accompanied by his favorite person, the Honorable Patsy Jo Hilliard, his wife of nearly 50 years. The Kemetmorphosis Holy Royal Family share their honor of this year's conference to the memory and the legacy of Baba Asa, our beloved teacher, guide, colleague, father, and friend, Ashe, Ashe. Had to read that. You had to know who Asa Hilliard was, family. And the conference was beautiful, great. I mean, put together very well. Tried to make sure they stayed on task. On that Friday night, there was a gala celebration and fundraising at the Union Temple Baptist Church in D.C. With the presiding was Dr. Willie Wilson, and he was a senior pastor at Union Temple. Willie Wilson used to be in Chicago, you know, and then welcoming Brother Paul Coates, and he's a brother who put together the book, and him and his wife. I mean, beautiful. This souvenir ad journal, beautiful. And then, of course, Jennifer Lewis, she's the sister who's the mother of everybody on all these programs, Blackish and so forth. But she went to Kemet. She went to Kemet, and she expressed how she felt and her Kemetmorphosis that she experienced. So it was a video. And then, of course, Brother Browder talked about the project, fundraising. Some very beautiful singing, especially Kaba the Soul Singer, man. Brother Kaba is outstanding. Good young man. I thought he was from Atlanta because he was with Tony Broder when he was here in Atlanta a few months ago. But he's from D.C. And brother's outstanding, you know. So. And then the next day, Dr. Charles Finch did libation. And Call to Unity by Anthony Yarborough. And then the first presenter was Sister Dr. Patricia Newton, Nana Akosu, Dr. Patricia Newton, Pat Newman, Newton, excuse me, on post-traumatic enslavement disorder. A very good presentation. And she said, you know, yeah, you can take some, you know, some vitamins and, you know, holistic stuff and, you know, change diet and so forth. But sometimes you're going to need medication. Sometimes medication, because, you know, understand something, brothers and sisters. We are, and we have been, and we will continue to be until we change ourselves in a hellified situation. Mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Until we do it. Then Brother Renoko talked about his travels. And of course, you know, if you know Renoko, who I love, I consider him a friend, a good friend. In fact, him and Anthony Broder, I support them financially. I give money once a month through PayPal for both of them because I think the work that they do is necessary. The work that they do is sincerely necessary because if you don't know what you have done, then you don't know what you can do. And if you are led to believe what this society wants to say about you, that you've never done nothing, that you were running around the jungle with a rag up your ass and a bone through your nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, then you will believe Caucasians. But if you listen to our scholars, our historians, then you will know truly who you are. And then, sister, I need to get Gina Page on here with African genealogy, African ancestry. She's one of the co-founders of African Ancestry, you know. And so it was a good day. And then Sunday, Professor Smalls on African spirituality was a good presentation. Kind of laughed a little bit. And then I left there because me and Brother Kwaku and Brother Ron Wafer. Hope Brother Ron Wafer is listening. The three of us traveled together. It was a good experience, a good travel. And we went from D.C. to Philadelphia and met up with Brother Elliot and Brother Ralph, and it was a good time. So the Kemet Morphosis Conference was outstanding. I would definitely say that when the next time it comes around, I will definitely be there. Because I do support him. I'm not sure if I'm going to go to Kemet with him at any time soon. But I don't know. You never know. I know I'm going back. I'm definitely going back to Kemet, you know. Maybe stay a little longer. Definitely going to Ghana. I'm going to Ghana this year. Because I was supposed to go this year. Didn't go, but I'm going. I'm going to Ghana soon, in fact. So I appreciate Brother Tony Browder and the work that he has done. Definitely support him, and brothers and sisters, you should support him as well. You know, he's excavating this temple, and they have done phenomenal work. I would say maybe if you could go online, you know, maybe if you can go to ikg-info@.com, maybe you might get some information on that. You know, or the other website number, IKG Resource Center, you know, so you can check out what has been done. You know, he has some outstanding videos of the progress that has been made. So we're going to take a break. We're going to play some Kwanzaa music. Like I said, that's what I'm going to play this whole month is from the Seven Principles. Kwame Cobb and Shavin Duka out of Chicago. I love them. Beautiful people. Seen them. I haven't seen them in years, but, you know, in fact, I think the last time I saw them was back in the 90s. We even brought them to our festival in Milwaukee, African World Festival. But Shavin Duka has a beautiful voice. And if you hear, once you start to hear some of these songs from the Seven Principle album or CD, you know, you will agree. And so, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay right here with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Umoja is the message. Got to get the message to our brothers and sisters.
Surely we had tribes, but we all live right there in Africa. for unity. Stand alone, 'cause unity's our resolution.
To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Following Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10. On Friday, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. On Saturday, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1, it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday night, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We have a caller holding. Let me take this call. Okay. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Brother O.T., how are you, my good brother?
Jay, I am fine, man. I am doing well, brother. How about you?
I'm doing very good. I see that little Joe had called up, and he didn't get a chance to catch up with you.
No, he did. Not this time. But we'll
you know.
Yeah.
Little Joe is the type of guy that will come and get you in Atlanta at some point in time.
Oh yeah.
Well, listen, Ochi, how you been, man? Did you enjoy the conference? I know you enjoyed hanging out with Ralph and Elliot.
No doubt, definitely enjoyed that. Definitely enjoyed that. Me and Brother Kwaku and another brother, Ron Wafer. We all enjoyed our time together. Not long, but very good, you know. And then we headed back down this way. But the conference itself, the Chemetamorphosis conference, was outstanding. Very well put together. Unfortunately, the venues were small. The church was large, but it was held at old YMCA that now is the Third Good Marshall Center in the northwest portion of D.C., northwest portion of D.C. But it was good. It was all good. Beautiful people, good presentations, you know. And that's the thing, Brother Jay, I've been to some conferences that even on the campus of Clark Atlanta, you know, the association, the History Association, was on the campus of Clark Atlanta. And here you had people from across the country presenting. Very few students, very few of our people, you know. I mean, you know, what's most important for us is to get the knowledge of ourselves so we can begin to change our minds, begin to make better decisions.
That ain't even the way that it is these days. You got to remember, when we first started studying, the movement was in the schools because the students was demanding African studies.
Right. I was there.
I remember that's how, you know, I got a chance to meet, you know, Dr. Reggie, Dr. Ben,
sure,
Dr. Clark, and all of them. You know, I even took a class with Dr. Clark at Hunter.
Yeah.
So the thing is, now there's not an emphasis on African scholarship. You know what I mean? They done mess with it so much that our young people don't even understand or realize the significance and the importance of our history and culture. You know what I mean? Then, you know, most of these kids today, a lot of them are coming from the crack epidemic. They're crack baby kids. So, you know, a crack baby kid ain't gonna even be thinking about that. You know, I was with a group of 15-year-olds the other day. It was like 10 of them in a little group session. And I asked, you know, all 10 of them, what did they want to be? What you think they told me, Oshi?
Well, they want to be, well, if the majority are young men, they want to be athletes, professional athletes, you know, or entertainers, some type of entertainer.
Yeah, they said, 8 of them said they wanted to be rappers and basketball players, and the other two, one said he wanted to work with computers, and the other one said that he wanted to be a doctor. And when the two that said they wanted to be different than rappers and basketball players, the other kids just looked at them and laughed at them. And, you know, I had to stop it right there. And I had to go on a little rant on them. I had to basically go off. I had to explain to them that you have a better chance of becoming a doctor, a lawyer, a computer scientist, or something else other than a basketball player and a rapper. I said, let me give you a perfect example. I said, son, stand up. Son, how tall are you? I'm 5'4". I said, well, you know, son, you 5'4". And, you know, you're 15 years old. There's not a great chance that you're going to become a 6-footer, brother. And, you know, I saw your game, and I'm telling you right now, stop wasting your damn time thinking about being a effing basketball player and get your head in the books and learn you a skill that will allow yourself to do something in life. There's a whole bunch of opportunities out here for you to learn a skill being in a program like this. So get off of that fantasy of being a basketball player, because I'm telling you, your game ain't that good. You know what I mean? So the other counselor afterwards gonna tell me, why did you say that to him and embarrass him in front of all those other kids? I said, you know why, miss? Because he's effing delusional. And I'm sick of black men being effing delusional when we had a crisis in our community and in our race. I thought I was being kind of gentle with his dumb ass. So the bottom line is, stop placating to these fools and tell them the truth, and maybe you'll get some better results soon out of them. Talking about I'm going to be a rapper in the basketball play, and then you're going to have the nerve to laugh at a kid who say he want to do something different.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? And I had to tell her, you don't develop men placating to them. You develop men by giving guidance
right.
and information. You know right. what I'm saying?
Exactly.
What do you got this program here for? Just to play with them? Just so you could get some money for the program? And what are you producing? What are you doing to get them on the path of doing the right thing? I'm not going to sit here with no 5'4" character who I done seen his basketball game telling me he want to be a basketball player. No, I'm not going to do it, man.
Right, right.
That's for people like you who I guess don't know no better. I know better.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Right.
I asked to do your kids talk about they want to be basketball players and rappers? I told them I think not. So why are you going to settle for that type of garbage with young black males, when the reality is, it ain't gonna happen. And if it does happen, there's no guarantee that you're gonna be successful. How many rappers out here that's broke?
Right.
If you know it and you study it, there's only a handful that make money in the industry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they even got opportunities to make money, but they don't have the intellect to do it.
Right.
So, you know, the bottom line is, we got to really start putting forward an agenda on how we're going to guide our kids into excellence. Because, you know, I don't know what the school system is doing. Matter of fact, if the truth be told, the school system not doing anything.
No. No, the public school system or any school system, if it's not seriously African-centered and the curriculum is controlled by us, is not doing us any good at all. That's for sure. So, you know.
Well, it's just wasting time.
Yeah.
It's really hurting it. It's really hurting their kids. See, what a lot of people in our community don't understand is there's always going to be a percentage of kids that's going to excel. That's just a given. That's the way society is set up. There's always going to be kids that's going to get to a certain path. The way that things are today, the standards and the ability to be successful because of the debt ratio that they're going to be getting into, they're not going to have the type of lives that their parents are.
Oh, no.
That's why you don't,
no, they're not.
That's why you don't have a honest rate of children, you know, being raised by middle-class families. Middle-class families are not having 3 and 4, 5 kids.
No, not anymore.
They're
no.
lucky. They're lucky because if they have one or two.
Right. Because of the economics.
Because of the debt.
Right. So. Yeah. I lost Jay. I'm quite sure he'll call back. But I want to get off into something that this article, I saw it online. And I saw it online. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, no, I was just saying the amount of debt that young people have today, it just hasn't been seen. I mean, you got people who are not being able to financially do anything other than pay rent and buy food.
Yeah.
They can't really do anything. I was talking with a friend of mine today. He was telling me this morning how his daughter, who just graduated college, she, you know, got a job, and how she's basically in a position to where as she back home living with them,
right,
crying because of the student loans,
right,
that she got to pay, and she can't go hang out and do anything. And I guess the men that she dealing with, they're able to trick on her, as I would say, you know, because
right,
the money's not there.
Yeah. So, yeah, but, I hear you.
You know, that's a really sad scenario, that we're in. I was hanging out with my old lady's grandson this weekend. Now, Oshi, let me explain this to you. I just want you to visualize this, because I guess you must see it with your grandkid too. Got up early, had breakfast. I'd say around 11 o'clock. First thing the character go do, you know, after he get out of the shower, wash up, is go get his little computer, whatever. Do you know this boy stayed on that computer from around 11 o'clock till around 4:30 when I just got fed up with it?
What was he, I mean, was he playing games? I mean, was he doing research? What was he doing?
Just playing games.
Yeah.
Just playing games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yo. And this is something that I've been observing and things of that nature. He don't want to go out and play. He don't want to do none of those things. All he want to do is stay on this game.
Right.
All day. You know, me and his grandmother got into it. Because I'm telling them, that's unnatural.
Yeah.
That's unnatural all day for a kid if you allow him to stay on this, you know, this game. The kid at least got to stop, look at TV. No, but then again, he's looking at TV too while he's doing it. That's the annoying thing also, because he's running up people's electric bills. But I'm saying, you know, at some point in time, the boy got to stop and read a book, go outside, get some fresh air, or do something.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot continuously stay on these games. And from what I'm observing from a lot of these kids, it's like with the smartphone. All day long, they on these phones. They don't read books.
Yeah.
They don't do anything. You know what I mean? And I mean, it's, I don't understand it, Oshi. I really don't. And we wonder why our kids are not developing on the level that they should, because they just not doing certain things, man, that I think is necessary for development. You got to read something every day. You got to. If you get a kid early and make them read every day, because I know I did it with mine, by the time they get around 8, 9, 10 years old, it's natural.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll always be a reader. But today, parents are not doing that. All you have to do is every day, in school, out of school, after they get finished doing their homework or whatever, you make them read for a half an hour. For the first couple of months, they're going to be hemming and hawing.
Yeah.
Hemming and
yeah.
hawing. And then what's going to happen is it's just going to become natural.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get them to that natural stage, you don't realize how much less work you have to do with these kids. Mm-hmm. Because they're always going to be inquisitive, and you're always going to be able to expose them to information. And you got to start it in the first grade. You gotta invest that time in demanding. Every day, if it's just a half an hour, if you do that, man, you will not believe
right.
the type of ferocious reader your kid will become
right.
by the time they 9, 10 years old.
And that's what we need.
The mind develops in worlds with books. All types of things open up to the imagination. And that's so true.
That's key. Well, bro, I got another caller. I'm going to get this other caller. Jay, if you want to hang on, hang on. Okay. All right, dear brother. All right. 267.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshin. Want to say good morning to Brother Jay and all your listeners, man. I got to return it was great meeting you and the other two brothers, man. And I'm glad that y'all made it home in that weather, because I was looking at that weather
It had passed through that Sunday. And then what was eerie, like, you know, let's be real. The snow was not in Pennsylvania or Maryland. In fact, it started south of Richmond. And the most of the snow was in the Carolinas. And as I'm driving through there, I'm looking at it like, damn, you know, this looks so eerie to see all of this mounds of snow and some cars and ditches, of course, and trees down, because that's heavy snow. You know, it's that moisture in that snow, you know. And so once we got out of close to the border of South Carolina, you know, and Georgia, that's when we seen no more snow, you know.
Right.
But right after Virginia, man, it was deep. And, you know, but the they're always going to clear the commercial highways, you know, the interstates and so forth. Always.
Yeah, that's money.
Exactly.
That's money.
Exactly. we got to move this stuff. So, yeah, it was a pleasure meeting you, Ralph.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. All three of you brothers, man.
Yeah.
And I wish it could have been a little longer so I could have taken you around the city to show you.
Well, next time. Yeah, next time. We'll definitely make that happen, brother. Believe me.
Yeah. Now, what I wonder, I'm going to make this real short, Brother Oshie, and I hope the brother's still listening. You know, the one thing I strongly agree with John Henry Clark on is we have no friends. And I heard you and the brother discussing earlier about, you know, how these people, even if they're Arab Muslims, move in our neighborhood and sell our people pork, cigarettes, and everything else. And, you know, one brother got very angry with me, matter of fact, almost hostile, because he was telling me that, you know, he agreed with Mark Lamont Hill and how he stuck his neck out for the Palestinians. And I was saying, like, well, I can only talk about my experience with the Palestinians, that they want to come in this country and step on us too. You know what I mean? So I think it's quite foolish of us in the position that we're in, even the letter people, which practice sex in a certain way, are now trying to step on us. And, you know, I said, like, we got to start looking out for each other. We don't have no time or no juice to be looking out for no other people in another land. I thought it was quite foolish of that brother to do that. And this brother sort of disagreed with me. So I just wanted to call and ask you, Oshie, how do you see this?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, the plight of other people who are being marginalized, who are being taken advantage of, who are basically going through some hellified conditions, I sympathize and empathize with them, but my bottom line main concern is for Africa and Africans on the continent and throughout the diaspora. That's my main and bottom line concern. Now, if I want to talk about the mistreatment of Palestinians, talk about what's happening in West Papua New Guinea with the brothers and sisters there who are trying to keep their land and being beat down and killed by Indonesians, you know, I mean, I've done that. I've done a program on that, you know. Uh-huh. But to me, my concern is Africa and Africans, exactly. You know. And so.
Exactly. Home. Take first. Care of home first.
Yep. Yep.
You know.
First.
And you know, and the brother has never really, I've never seen where he's taken the mantle and fought for us. I've seen him fight for the LGB, you know, the letter people.
Yeah.
I seen where he fought, fight for the Palestinians. I see where he fight. I never seen where he pick up the mantle and actually said, like, you know what, we as black people, we need to. I never seen that out of
him. Okay. Okay.
Never.
And nobody cares. Nobody cares about African people on this planet, brother.
Right.
We ain't got no allies.
Well, you can't. Wait a minute. But Jay, let me tell you something. It's hard for you to convince certain people of that statement you just said.
I know that because the history shows us. Now, you gotta know history in order to make certain statements. History has showed us wherever there has been some sort of movement and there's been so-called allyship, when it's all said and done, those who are supposedly your allies get what they want, the position that they want, and then they go and tell you to kiss their ass.
Yep. Let me give you another example. That brother Nick Cannon was on there showing, you know, saying like Amy Schumer, this other Silverman chick, and another girl, all said this word homophobic, said homophobic slurs against the gay community and no backlash against them. And the thing about it, one of those women, I think her last name was Silverman, spoke up against that and said, well, we're not threatening like Kevin Hart. So that lets you know that as far as this feminism thing, or our women want to join on this woman's power bandwagon, it ain't for y'all. It's, you know, it's not for them. I mean, just like they got rid of Tamika Mallory just because they want her to, like, you know, repudiate Louis Farrakhan.
Right.
This stuff, we have to, like, try to retrain our people. What John Henry Clark said years ago, we have no friends. We better start looking out for each other and practicing this love and concern and respect with each other, because they don't have it for us.
That's right.
And, you know, and
you got the gatekeepers who push back about what you say. Whenever you put forward that narrative, here come Messy Jesse, Perm Daddy, and the rest of the footstool.
Karen Hunter.
Hold up, brother. Have you had the opportunity to listen to that character? I tried to get Oshie to listen to her. Have you heard her?
I can't listen to her, man.
Oh, man. She is one of the most dangerous negresses on this planet. Now, today, she probably has the best show because she got a a young sister on there, Marie Favors, who's a real, real conscious sister, but it shows consciousness out of sickness. See, this young sister that she has on her today, and this is the day that I really want, if Oshi could listen, to hear the madness and to see the madness involved with a Negro who has a little bit of knowledge but wants to still integrate into this society. So this chick Hunter has this thing that she's pushing called the global majority. And the sister Favors, she know better. But she go along with that BS. And you know, they push this whole political thing so hard that it's absolute madness. Yeah. But
I gave up my XM subscription years ago. I said, I'm not going to be contributing to this garbage. You know what I mean? Because all it was is a Democrat. It's a Democratic,
you know,
control station.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you know what?
For,
you
and know, I said no.
You know.
But you know what? I'm going to go back. Hey, look, I'm going to go back on mute, fellas.
Okay.
I didn't want to keep you that long.
Okay.
But I just want to say, with a bro. Hey, Jay, I'm coming up there to New York, so I'm going to call you. I want to meet you, brother, face to face.
When are you coming up?
Man, matter of fact, I got to go to Long Island City Friday.
I'll give you a call.
All
right.
All right, brother.
All right, peace out, y'all.
Peace.
Take care.
Yeah, but Oshi, if you could listen to this sister, I'm telling you, man, it would blow your mind.
Right.
Because
I've heard her.
This person is dangerous.
Right, I've heard her. I've heard her a couple of times, and what Ralph was just saying about, and I've mentioned, and I've asked this question a few times. I kept saying, "Is there a program on satellite radio, XM, Siri, or whatever? Is there a program like mine that's talking about independence, self-determination,
no.
liberation, and sovereignty for African people? Is there a program like that?"
Not at all.
Because I mean, I know Joe Madison.
Madison's a joke.
And I know what's that? What's that?
Joe
other?
Madison is a joke.
What's that?
He's not much. He's nothing other than a Democratic operative.
Right. And that's not. And that's the thing, man. Because you know, these people who are sworn to, loyal to. I mean, would do whatever for the Democratic Party. It is sickening. It is sickening
well,
to me.
Know, you know, they gotta make their money, Oshi. I mean,
yeah.
Some of them. Well, I can't say that honestly, but some of them make good money.
Yeah, yeah.
Make good money. But I tell you like this: everybody gotta hustle, and when you get the opportunity to hustle, you hustle. I mean, they got a Negro on there. Named Mark Thompson.
Mark Thompson, I know him.
He even got an African name, but every time you listen to him, he defending white folks.
Yeah.
He's trying to get you on the plantation. Everything is about the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's sickening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like he was so happy about what happened yesterday between Pelosi and Schumer. I thought he was going to have an orgasm. You know, the way he was acting. I mean,
I
come
know.
On, man.
I know.
You know,
I watched.
You know what I mean? This stuff is, that, listen.
Go out here and pay my water bill.
You know, I saw some.
I need to get on that movie studio, man.
I saw some of that on CNN last night. And the replay of that.
Listen,
yeah.
The thing is this. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, are seasoned professional
politicians. No doubt.
They know all the tricks of the trade. They play games. They play games with him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But you know what the one thing that nobody picks up on that the most dishonest thing is? This is the most dishonest thing. They never talk about how he said Mexico was going to pay for the wall. They never place that into the narrative whenever they confront him. You notice that?
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and Donald Trump are friends. I know Chuck Schumer and Donald Trump are friends.
Well, you know.
Well,
of course they do. Of course they do, because at one time Donald Trump was a contributor to their causes and to their campaigns. Right.
See, that's why, you know, I think it's so dishonest, because the thing to shut down his whole narrative would be, but you said Mexico was going to pay for the war. Why are the American people now obligated to pay this $5 billion for a war? That's not even going to stop anything.
No.
Remember this, and let's be clear of something. If somebody wants to get into the country, they're going to get into the country, because there's multiple ways to get into this country. But why don't we stop playing games?
Right.
Why don't we be honest about it? And that just goes to show you how wicked and devious the media is.
Yeah.
Because the media never puts that into the narrative that there's all sorts of different places
and to me
to come into this country from from points. And on top of that, he said Mexico was going to pay for the war. So why is the American people obligated to pay for this war?
Because Mexico was not going to do it from Jump Street, and he knew that.
We know that.
But he wants this wall because this is a campaign promise that he made, and at his rallies, build that wall, you know, or lock her up, you know, this stupidity, this madness. You know, where in this country you have bridges crumbling, infrastructure that needs repair, but yet you want to put all that money into a damn border wall. No.
How was
put
the roads that you drove on this weekend?
Oh, they were nice. They were nice.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The
but do you notice how much have you noticed how much the tolls have gone up?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that toll on 95.
In some situations, it's cheaper to fly than it is to come up.
No, you're right. Because of the gas prices and so forth, even though gas prices are down, but still. But to some degree, you're right. Because, I mean, you can get a flight sometimes under $200. And of course, that's time saved. That's $200. And that flight may take you an hour and a half, 2 hours, three, whatever. But, you know,
what was the highest toll you paid?
We paid excuse me. We paid $22 in tolls.
Okay, that's not too bad.
Yeah, we paid $22 in tolls. And over $100 in fuel.
Over $120 you got in fuel. A pretty big car, right?
No, we had a rental small SUV.
Okay, well, as long as it was an SUV in that snow.
Yeah. Well, also, too, myself and Brother Kwaku, we're not small men either.
Right, you know. I know. I'm a big dude, so you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know how hard it is. You know, I know when I drive, I got to drive in the truck. I can't drive no little car. I can't fit in one of them, so I don't even try it no more.
I hear you.
Well, listen, Oshi. Keep up the good work. I'm glad you had a good time.
For
you
sure.
know what I mean?
For sure.
You're doing what you have to do. But we gotta fight the contradictions that's going on in front of us, you know, like Ralph was saying, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what direction we gonna go forward, man.
Well,
you know what I've been thinking about this? This is an idea. I think we need to set up a GoFund page and get Baba Baruti, Mimani, and maybe Ashwa Kwesi to write a manifesto on us going forward towards sovereignty. And, you know, pay them to do it, and if there's any funds left over, use that to disseminate that manifesto to our people.
I really think
we need that,
yeah.
Oshi.
Yeah.
I really think they need to come together and put forward a direction of African sovereignty that our people will use as a template for us to move forward. because we need something desperately.
We do.
Because the direction that these Negro peens are taking us into is death.
Yeah.
It's really, really death. The Karen Hunters of the world and the rest of them are some of the most dangerous people.
Yeah.
Because anytime you're talking about joining forces, and I'm sorry to say this, but it's so truthful, joining forces as so-called global majority, you asking for death of African people. Because none of those groups that you want to join forward, move forward with, and want us to be a part of,
right,
give a goddamn about us. They've proven it and they've shown it, that whenever they get the position that they want, they kick us to the side. And I'm waiting for someone to tell me I'm wrong. I'm waiting for someone to tell me today, who do we have allyship with? Who do we stand side by side with as equals? You can't name me no group that we do, OC. There's no group that we do.
No, and you know what, Jay?
That there is are looking to dominate us, OC.
Exactly. That's why I don't care about joining any other groups, any other coalitions, any other whatever. Only thing I'm interested in is for African people to come into their right mind and work together to be sovereign, to work together to build schools and so forth for our people. That's my bottom line concern. I don't care about,
OC, I support you 100% because nobody could answer the question when you ask them that. And it's dangerous when you have black people pushing it, because when it's all said and done, it's only going to lead to our extinction.
Yeah.
So whenever you get a chance to talk to Baba Baruti and Sister Mwemba,
I will see him. I will see. I will see.
About that?
I will see her.
I think we could get this.
Yeah.
I think we could get this GoFund page going to raise the necessary money for them.
I will see her
so
soon.
So that we could be able to distribute it to our people.
Are
we even going to distribute it to the dumb, deaf, and blind?
I hear you. I will see her soon.
Hope and enjoy the rest
all
of
right.
the show.
All right, Jay.
Help me on
Peace.
Me, please.
All right, bro. I will see Mama Marimba soon. And I'm on a Kwanzaa program with Baba Baruti at the Black Dot Cultural Center in Lithonia on the 29th. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. This article appeared 2 years ago, March 2016. And researchers have found strong evidence that racism helps the GOP win. Well, when this article happened, Trump wasn't happening. And now you can see how deep this article really is, because it doesn't reference Trump or anything else. It doesn't reference the elections in Georgia, Florida, and other Mississippi, because that is the reality of this country. Researchers have found strong evidence that racism helps the GOP win. In thousands and thousands of unmarked cemeteries throughout the South, the gradual decay of human remains forms shallow depressions in the earth. There is no comprehensive list of such sites, and many have been destroyed. Still, in places such as Charlotte and Orange and Bedford and Hendersonville and Tuscaloosa, the ground inundates over these believed to have been captives. I don't use the word slaves. I don't use the word white. Don't use the word black. So I'm speaking to this article in the vernacular that I chose. There are places in political landscape, too, where the ground shifts ever so slightly, where captivity has warped the electoral terrain. In the South, it seems old prejudice have persisted. Southern counties that had more captives on the eve of the Civil War are distinct from their neighbors. Caucasian residents in these areas are more hostile towards Africans, and they are more likely to vote Republican today. New research shows During our archival census figures and recent polls, the study adds to the expanding body of evidence of the importance of racial anxiety to the predominantly Caucasian Republican coalition. The underlying racial hostility goes on in the culture, passed on from generation to generation, says David Sears, a psychologist at UCLA. Local cultures doesn't change very quickly. Of course, many things have changed in the South in a century and a half since emancipation. Captivity, lingering political effects are often buried in the data, just as many old graves have been paved over and others are hidden by weeds and brush. If you know what to look for, though, you can still see the depressions. Before the Civil War, the South, the Southern landowners who were relied on captives, after captive Africans, lived in a crescent that extended south and west from South Carolina, following the Piedmont through Georgia and Alabama, and then north along the Mississippi River. This is where Southern farm cotton on plantations between the coast and the rugged terrain of the Appalachians. The crop demanded so much manpower that it would not have been profitable without the captivity of African people, said Harvard University's Maya San, one of the authors of the study. About 4 million people, or 32% of the population, were captives in the South in 1860. Sin and her colleagues argue that captivity and the system of repression that replaced it after the Civil War continued to shape how Caucasian Southerners thought about race for generations to come. Following the emancipation, not only did Caucasian Southerners lose the source of their economic power in this region, given their numbers, the former captives also threatened to end Caucasian political dominance at the polls. In response, Caucasian Southerners in those counties with large American African populations found ways of preserving their power over the freed captives. Soon after the war, for example, former planters developed a system of sharecropping, which allowed them to maintain their control over African labor. It was an improvement over captivity, but it was still a form of peonage. Former captives, eager to farm for themselves, borrowed their capital from Caucasian merchants at a usury rate. Tenants had to give up much of their crop to their creditors and landlords. Elsewhere in the South, prejudice waned more quickly after the fall of the Confederacy. According to the study, where relatively few former captives lived, Caucasian Southerners had less need for these practices. In the 20th century, when the Caucasian Southerners developed new legal and extraterritorial methods of oppression, the end of Reconstruction allowed Caucasian democratic governments to disenfranchise brothers and sisters and voters and to segregate public spaces. These governments also acquiesced in thousands of lynchings. Blackwell and Sin found that in two other similar counties, a slight difference of 10 percent points in the enslaved population in 1860 was associated with 1.89 additional lynchings per 100,000 residents in the years between 1882 and 1930. Previous research has shown that lynchings were more frequent when the price of cotton fell, evidence that Caucasian Southerners attacked their American African victims when their economic dominance was threatened. Today, most of the old plantations have been sold off. Where captives once picked cotton, there are subdivisions and stadiums. The prejudice, however, remains. There are still a lot of people who think American Africans are simply inferior to Caucasians, said Roger Ransom, an economic historian at the University of California, Riverside. It is definitely there. I don't think it has ever went away. Blackwell and Singh examined data and racial attitudes from national polls conducted in 2010 and 2011 using the response of Caucasian participants in the states that were former Confederates, including West Virginia, as well as Missouri and Kentucky. Captive states that did not succeed. Those in counties where more captives lived in 1860 were more likely to hold negative views of American Africans. For example, they were more likely to disagree with the statement, generations of captivity and discrimination have created conditions that make it difficult for American Africans to work their way out of the lower class. They were less likely to support affirmative action. There were many respondents who held similar views living in other counties too. But the differences were clear when the researchers looked at the results for all of the tens of thousands of Southerners who participated in these polls. Those Caucasian Southerners who live where cotton was king are also substantially less likely to identify as Democrats today. Among otherwise similar counties, a difference of 20 percentage points in the enslaved population in 1860 was correlated with a difference of 2.3 percentage points in the share of Caucasian Democrats. Recent research by economist Ebony Ann Washington. When I seen this name, I was like, man, you know she a sister. Well, number one, George Washington didn't have no son. So when you see Washington, that last name is more than likely. I have never met a Caucasian named Washington or Jefferson. Ebonyana Washington suggests that Caucasian Southerners who defected from the Democratic Party after the Civil Rights Movement were those with the most conservative views on race. Democrats who held moderate and conservative views on other issues who lived in other parts of the country largely remained loyal to the Democratic Party. Polls consistently show that Republicans are more likely to hold racial prejudices, and not just in the South. Nationally, almost 1 in 5 Republicans oppose interracial dating, compared to just 1 in 20 Democrats, according to a Pew Research poll. While 79% of Republicans agree with negative statements about American Africans, 79% of the Republicans agree with negative statements about American Africans, such as one about our captivity and discrimination, just 32% of Democrats do. But they treat us the same. Let's not fool ourselves, okay, y'all? Once again, the Democrats and the Republicans are just a different wing of the same filthy, nasty, funky bird. Let's be real. Conservatives, leaders argue that Republicans do not exploit racial anxiety to win votes, and that any differences between Republicans and Democrats are coincidental. It could be, for example, that a platform of limited government is naturally more appealing to people who live in sparsely populated areas where independence and autonomy are valued, and that people who live there also hold more intense biases for historical reasons. This party does not prey on people's prejudice. We appeal to their highest ideas, said Paul Ryan. This is the party of Lincoln. Yeah, right. Other researchers, however, suggest that the party does not benefit from racial apathy. Sears of UCLA has found that even among Caucasian voters with equally conservative views on issues relative to race, those were more negative views about American Africans and more likely to vote Republican. He and Michael Tesler, a political scientist at the University of California, Irvine, showed that there were many racially conservative Caucasian voters who supported John Kerry and Bill Clinton. Yeah. But when it's time to vote for Barack Obama, they couldn't do it. But they didn't vote for Barack Obama. The conservatives say, well, we just like a small government down here. Well, why is that? Sears asked. Sears said that the Caucasian Republicans have a wide range of reasons for supporting their candidates and that the ideas Ryan mentioned are deeply important to many voters. At the same time, Sears suggests that GOP doctrine on the importance of personal responsibility together with elevated rates of American African poverty and unemployment help some Republicans rationalize their belief that people of color are inferior, beliefs they probably develop in childhood. In general, there is evidence that children receive their racial prejudice from their parents, as well as other adults in their communities in which they live. The three political scientists examined data from a national survey of high school seniors first conducted in 1965. which found that the students' feeling about race was closely correlated with those of their parents. Duh, of course. These statistics didn't change at all in 1997 when surveyors talked to the former students again. In other words, adult feelings about race were still influenced by how they grew up after their 50 birthday, even during a period when attitudes toward race in society at large were liberalizing rapidly. I grew up with this kind of negative feeling about American Africans, maybe disgust or repulsive, Sears said. The culture gives me the reason why I feel that way. It provides the justification. The culture. European culture is what does it. And our problem is, damn it, we embrace European culture. Blackwell, one of the authors, agreed. People in general tend to think of their views as their own. Conclusions that they come to after thinking long and hard about the facts. There's sufficient evidence out there to show that that's not the way people have come to form beliefs about the world and about politics in general. The new study does not provide direct evidence that these Caucasian Southerners are more likely to vote Republican because Republican politicians appeal to their racial anxieties. Rather, it suggests that racial biases, along with political beliefs, are transmitted from one generation to another as part of an overall culture of a particular place. If you think back to that culture, the role of captivity, the role of racial hierarchy, the role of racial hostility was so powerfully embedded. Recently, researchers working around the world have been discovering that society fears, anxiety, and hatreds have remarkable longevity. In Africa, the descendants of those nations who suffered most under the captive trade are more likely to be mistrustful today. In Germany, the Nazi Party won a large share of the vote in cities where Christians had blamed Jews for the Black Death and massacred them 6 centuries earlier. Together, these results suggest that societies can be scarred and traumatized like people. For psychologists, political scientists, and pundits who hope to understand why voters do what they do, these findings argue for paying a little more attention to history. Pay a little more attention to history, I agree. After all, captivity's enduring legacy is evident not only in the statistics on American African poverty and education. The institution continues to influence how Caucasian Southerners think and feel about race and how they vote. Captivity still divides the American people. When we study public opinion, we tend to focus on the now. These political attitudes really can persist over generations and last an incredibly long time. And that's what you've seen happen with the election of Trump. That's what you've seen happen. And that's what you've seen happen in the election of a number. I think the problem with Roy Moore is that he was so offensive and so much stuff came out on him. Otherwise, he would have won. He would have won. And also to the Caucasian that ran against him. You know. Because if it was a brother or a sister that ran against Roy Moore in Alabama, he would have won. Just like all the stuff that was said by some of the candidates that did win. Truly offensive. Hell, Trump. Trump said, I grab him by the... Well, anyway, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodio. Bibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahodio family. Peace.